Well, this morning, we're going to be opening up with our look at the Easter experience and what it means to us, and what does it call for us to respond in what way. And today, we're going to look at a portion of the Easter story starting in Matthew. And so if you have your Bibles, you can turn over to Matthew chapter 16. Matthew chapter 16. And we're going to start in verse 1. It says, "And the Pharisees and the Sadducees came to test him. They asked him to show them a sign from heaven. And he answered them, 'When it is evening, you say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red.' Now, when Jesus..." We're just going to jump forward. I started in the wrong one, so we're going to jump over to Matthew 27. I'm sorry. 27. 27. In verse 1. Okay, restart here. "When morning came, all the chief priests and the elders of the people took counsel against Jesus to put him to death. And they bound him and they led him away and delivered him over to Pilate, the governor." We skip down to verse 11. It says, "Now Jesus stood before the governor, and the governor asked him, 'Are you the king of the Jews?' And Jesus said, 'You have said so.' But when he was accused by the chief priests and the elders, he gave no answer. Then Pilate said to him, 'Do you not hear how many things they are testifying against you?' But he gave him no answer, not even to a single charge, so that the governor was greatly amazed. Now, at the feast, the governor was accustomed to release for the crowd any one prisoner whom they wanted. And they had then a notorious prisoner called Barabbas. So when they had gathered, Pilate said to them, 'Whom do you want me to release for you, Barabbas or Jesus, who is called Christ?' For he knew that it was out of envy that they had delivered him up. Besides, while he was sitting on the judgment seat, his wife had sent word to him, telling him, 'Have nothing to do with this righteous man, for I have suffered much because of him in a dream.' Now the chief priests and the elders had persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas and to destroy Jesus. And the governor again said to them, 'Which of the two do you want me to release for you?' And they said, 'Barabbas.' Now Pilate said to them, 'Then what shall I do with Jesus, who is called the Christ?' And they all said, 'Let him be crucified.' And he said, 'Why? What evil has he done?' But they shouted all the more, 'Let him be crucified.' And Pilate said to them, 'Then what shall I do with Jesus, who is called Christ?'" And that's the key verse there. That's the key word that we're going to be looking at throughout these next few weeks. What do we do with Jesus? What do we do with Jesus? They said, "Let him be crucified." And again, he said, "What evil has he done?" But they shouted all the more, "Let him be crucified." You know, beyond this sentence of death, beyond the shock that you are facing execution, I think the worst thing is this sense of rejection. I mean, no one likes to be rejected. No one likes to even be treated as if you're not wanted. Can you imagine a crowd of people shouting you down, calling for your death, people that you have loved, people that you have ministered to, people that you have healed, people that you have encouraged, and yet all you hear is the crowds of people shouting, crucify him, kill him, we don't want him. Rejection is a hard feeling. I mean, we've all felt rejection at some point in time. And we use physical words for that. When we're rejected, we say, you hurt my feelings. We use these words to describe rejection as if it is a physical thing. We say that, you know what, I have a broken heart. When we deal with rejection, it has been proven that it's more than just this perception. It's more than just a mental state of mind. It's more than just an emotion. They have found that rejection actually equals a physical change within our bodies. And in fact, there was a study done by a Matt Lieberman, who is a social psychologist at the University of California in Los Angeles at UCLA. And they did this study where they took volunteers and they hooked them up to sensors. And throughout their day and weeks, they measured the response. And these people were asked to do certain tasks. And they did not know what the study was looking for. They were just asked to do certain things. And throughout this task at different times, they would be totally rejected. Either what they were done would be belittled. They would be put down. As they studied this, they took the responses, and they actually found that in the brain waves, whenever there was rejection, the brain would actually respond in the same areas and almost to the same extent as if someone had physically harmed them, because they would also test them how they responded to pain and to things. And they found that rejection actually was a physical response within the body. Again, many times when those things happen, we even say other things like, it was like getting kicked in the gut. Have you ever done that when something happens, someone says something and we say, and it actually is like being kicked in the gut, that our body responds to rejection. And this is what Jesus went through. We talked about in our study in Sunday school this morning about the fact that Jesus was overwhelmed more so by the rejection that he received, not just by the people in this moment, but throughout the world. The cross was not just a physical payment, but that he became sin. He became our guilt. In fact, he took on him, he felt every moment of rejection that we feel, every moment of guilt, every moment of regret when we have done things that we feel our own rejection when we know that we have to. This is what Jesus took on. So can you imagine the physical pain and the physical responses as his brain dealt with rejection throughout all the ages of every created person, that he took on the sin of the world? And so we're going to look at this rejection that he took. In fact, we know that when he died, he did not die from the crucifixion. It's been medically proven that he died before the other people on the cross, because when they plunged the spear into his side, out of his side came a mixture of blood and water. And they've asked, what is that meaning? And this is before medical experts back in the day. You know, the people who wrote the Gospels did not know this. But it is when the heart becomes so enlarged because of stress and anguish. It is basically a what do they call it? Heart failure, congestive heart failure. From all the rejection and grief and sorrow, Jesus' heart literally exploded. That the buildup of water around the heart crushed it to a point that it had exploded, so that when they pierced him, the water and the blood mixed together came out. So he actually died from the sin that he took upon him rather than the physical abuse of the cross. It is rejection that brought the death of Christ. So let's look at this. He was rejected by the people. Now, when you think of that, you know, it started well before the cross. In fact, some of those verses that I started to read at the beginning, it said this in Matthew 16, that they asked for a sign. And Jesus said to them, "When it is evening, you say it will be fair weather, for the sky is red." Now, when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" And this is what they said to him. "Some say that you're John the Baptist. Others say that you're Elijah. And others say Jeremiah, one of the prophets." That might sound okay, you know, to be held up. But he had been telling them he was the Messiah. How do you think he felt after all this time and they still don't see who I am? That this is a beginning portion of the rejection. That you can see the frustration in Jesus. That they are still not understanding when he asks them, "Who do they say that I am?" They don't want me to be the Messiah. Of course, he asked them that question, "Who do you say that I am?" And again, that goes to this question that we are looking at Easter. What are you going to do with Jesus? Who do you say that Jesus is? And then later on, right before the Passion Week, it says in John chapter 6, it says, "After this," and what this is that Jesus had been just preaching that he was going to be going to the cross, that he was going to be facing this betrayal. He preached that you need to take my body upon you, that my blood is going to be your redemption, and that you need to follow me. And it says that after this, many of his disciples turned back and no longer walked with him. His very disciples began to turn away from him. Because how many know there was more disciples than just 12? At one point, it is felt to be over 100 disciples that were following him. We know then there was 70 that he sent out, and then we know that there was 12, and of the 12, there was 3. And so many of his disciples left him when he began to preach this gospel of true redemption and repentance. And so Jesus said to his disciples again, "Do you also want to leave me?" So over again, he's asking this question, "Who do you say I am? Do you want to leave me?" He is telling them, you need to make a decision. This is coming down to a place that we need to look in our heart and begin to ask ourselves, what are we going to do with Jesus? At this Easter time, we need to look at ourselves, what have we been doing with Jesus? Because you know what? Many of us, we try and cover that up. We don't want to really say what we're doing with Jesus. It's a human defense mechanism. Because many times we know that we are rejecting him, but we don't want to feel the guilt of rejecting him because we know we shouldn't reject him, but we are rejecting him. And so we cover it up. But I want us to uncover this. Who do we really say that Jesus is? What are we doing? Like Pilate says, what are we really doing with Jesus? Do we also want to leave him? Do we love the fact of Jesus in our life, but are we really wanting to, would rather be with my friends over here and the rest of the world. Do we really want to leave Jesus? Why would they reject him? Let's look at three reasons today why we reject Jesus and why they rejected Jesus. And I think the same reasons that they rejected Jesus, the reason they cried out, "Crucify him," when he had fed 5,000, when he had raised up the dead, Lazarus, when he had healed the lepers, and you would imagine, why would someone reject that? Someone who speaks life, someone who accepts you, even if you're dirty, someone who loves you, even if you're a foreigner, you would think, that is a person that I'm going to support. He had changed lives, and yet they rejected him. The first thing we see is that he was rejected because he claimed to be God. He didn't claim to be just a good person. He was rejected. If he had just claimed to be a good person out to help everyone, you know what? They would not have rejected him. But they rejected him because he was not satisfied with just being a good person. He said, no, I am God. I am the Messiah. I am the Christ. And I do these things because I am the very source of life. You see, let's look back at when he faced the priest. Many people say, well, no, Jesus didn't really claim to be God. You know, that was kind of, the church kind of put that on him. He was just a good person. Well, no, let's look at really the words of what Jesus said. While being persecuted and on trial, Matthew 26, verse 63, says this, but Jesus remained silent during his trial. And the high priest said to him, I adjure you by the living God, tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. See, at this point, they had tried to bring in witnesses that would testify against them, and they tried to pay people to lie about it, and they couldn't get anyone to give a good witness so that they could actually put him to death. They didn't have a good reason to kill the man. So they said, you need to tell us, are you the Son of God? And Jesus said to him, here it is, 64, straight out. Jesus said to him, you have said so. But I tell you, from now on, you will see the Son of Man seated at the right hand of power, coming in the clouds of heaven. Jesus said, yes, you've said it, and that's who I am. And you're going to see more than that. You're going to see me sitting at the right hand of God. And I'm going to come in the clouds of glory. You see, Jesus claimed to be God. Jesus said, I am here not just to teach you good ways to live, but I am here to be your God. You see, as we follow Jesus, as we call ourselves Christians, we need to understand what that means. A lot of people forget, we begin to focus just on living his way of life. We take on the philosophy. But this is what C.S. Lewis wrote, his famous statement. It says, he writes in his book, either this man was and is the Son of God, or else a madman or something worse. You can shut him up for a fool, you can spit at him and kill him as a demon, or you can fall at his feet and call him Lord and God. That's your only choices. But let us not come with any patronizing nonsense about him being a great human teacher. He has not left that open to us. He did not intend to. You see, you need to understand that you cannot just think Jesus is a good teacher, because what good teacher thinks that he's God? Then you're following a madman. If you think he was not God, then him claiming to be God cannot make him a good teacher. He is not just a good teacher. You either need to claim him as a fool and as a madman, or you need to fall at his feet and understand that he is God. There's no in between. And we need to understand that. Now, God did not, he did not just leave it up to our own thoughts and his own claims of being God. And here's the awesome thing. There are tons of evidences of his divinity. And just to go through them quickly, we can see over and over again, not only did he claim to be God, but he proved to be God. First of all, he completely fulfilled all of the prophecies of the Word of God. Now, this is amazing. We say this quickly, but you need to understand there are over 700 prophecies in the Old Testament about the Messiah, the Christ that would come to save his people. I mean, all the things from being born of a virgin to being born in Bethlehem, we know all different ones, but there are tons that maybe you don't even know that it speaks about throughout the Old Testament, from being betrayed for 30 pieces of silver. Even that is predicted in the Old Testament. There's over 700 prophecies of the Messiah. Now, some people say, well, you know what? Jesus was trying to prove him, so he was purposely fulfilling the prophecies. You know, some people will claim that he did it. First of all, it's a little hard for you to purposely, before you're even born, decide where you're going to be born. How many can tell your mom, you need to go to Bethlehem? Okay, and then even as a child, I guess, you know, a newborn infant, you're going to decide that you're going to be known as a person who was raised in Nazareth, but yet known as a person who came out of Egypt. Well, how can you do both? How can you be raised in Nazareth, but you came out of Egypt? And yet, Jesus had no control over that they escaped from Herod by going to Egypt. And then as he grew up, they came back after Herod died, and then he was raised in Nazareth. And so, yes, he was both raised in Nazareth, and yet he came out of Egypt. You cannot control your childhood in that way. You cannot control, how are you going to control the fact that you are going to be buried in a rich man's tomb, someone that had not even been a believer of you until that moment that you were killed. See, there are so many things that could not be within your control. Now, there's some things that you could have done to fulfill prophecies. And there were things that Jesus said, I am doing this in a way to fulfill prophecies. When he rode into town on a donkey, Jesus knew that was prophesied. And so, yes, he did that to fulfill the prophecy. So there were some things he could, but not all the 700 that you can do. And some people say, well, it's just coincidence. It was just coincidence that maybe Jesus, when he was born, he realized, oh, wow, I came up from Egypt. I was born in Bethlehem. You know what? I'm gonna use that coincidence, and I'm going to do all the rest of them. Do you know how hard it would have been for the coincidences of all of the prophecies to be fulfilled? In fact, they did a study, and they didn't even do all 700. This was a study done by Peter Stoner, a science professor, and came up with only 48 of the prophecies. So a small percentage. And for just 48 prophecies to be accomplished, for someone to live that life and follow it completely, it came out to, this is not coincidence. The only possible way that could happen is 1 in 10 to the 157th power. Now you might sound, that sounds like some mathematical thing. What is 1 to 10 to the 157th power? It's explained in a wonderful book, and I would encourage you to read the book by Lee Strobel, The Case for Christ, and then also The Case for Easter. He talked to a scientist, and the scientist, do you understand how small an atom is? An atom, okay, not a molecule, but an atom. An atom is so small that it takes a million atoms lined up next to each other to cover the width of a hair. A million atoms is the width of a hair, okay? Think of that. Now, if you think of all the atoms in the universe, okay, it comes out to a trillion, 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 billion atoms spread out over the universe. And if you were given the choice in all of the universe, not just on Earth, we're talking through every star, every moon, you got to go find one atom, and you get one choice. And if you pick the right atom, that would be the probability of you picking the exact atom would be 1 in 10 to the 157th power. It's not going to happen. That's the probability of someone coincidentally fulfilling all the prophecies, and yet Jesus did it. We look at Jesus' life from the soldiers gambling at his cross, prophecy. From the 30 pieces of silver, prophecy. From coming out of Egypt, prophecy. You can go on and on. Prophecies. Jesus proved to be God. You see, it was on purpose. He was God. And we need to understand that. Another thing that proves his divinity is his uncompromised character. This goes beyond even the Gospels. It talks about in secular historians that there was this man who was known as a righteous man that did nothing wrong. See, we've all sinned. All of us have something that someone can find dirt on. How many know that you can find dirt on anyone? And yet Jesus had nothing. Peter said in him there was no sin. He never sinned. This is only God. Even in his crucifixion, even in his attacks by his betrayers, and yet he did not sin. This is an evidence of his divinity. His miraculous power. And again, in secular books by Josephus, it is acknowledged that there was this man, Jesus, who did the miraculous, that no one could explain how he did the things that he did. And Jesus explained, I do this so that you will know that I have the power to forgive sins. You don't think that I'm God? You don't think I forgive sins? Well, then let me just heal this lame man. Get up and walk. See, they were upset that he claimed to be God. He said, oh, well then, let me see you heal the blind. How can I not be God if I can do these things? You see, this proves that he is God. The next one is his avoidable death. Why did he not just avoid death if he was not God? All he had to do is say, I'm a rabbi, I'm a good teacher. You know, people say, no, he was just a good teacher. No, this proves that he claimed to be God, because otherwise there would be no reason to kill him. His death was avoided. In fact, this is what Jesus says, no one takes my life from me, but I give it. He gave his life for us. It was not taken from him. We look at his verifiable resurrection. Over and over again, eyewitness accounts of his resurrection, that he came back from the dead. If you used legal practices, there is no way that it can be proven that he did not rise from the dead. It is verifiable. There are more evidences for the resurrection. People will tell you, oh, you can't prove it, and he didn't rise. And that's going to be the biggest thing that the enemy will use in our hearts to bring doubts. And yet you can understand that you stand on solid ground when we look at the resurrection of Jesus. And no one just dies and then comes back. That's God. I have not seen anyone, okay, go ahead and kill me because I'll come back tomorrow. That is God. Jesus was God. His last one, his faithful followers. You know what? There is no better proof that Jesus rose from the dead, that he was God, than these men who ran for their life when Jesus was arrested. Again, verifiable. They ran for their life. They were afraid. And yet, after the resurrection, these men followed him without wavering. Now, how stupid could they be as, oh, let's fool everyone that he rose from the dead. Everyone says that they stole his body to make people think that he rose. Who is going to die in the way that they died just to keep the gag going? Okay, don't tell anyone that we really stole his body. It would not have happened. They were changed. They saw him alive is the reason why they were willing to go to their deaths. They were willing to be stabbed. They were willing to be boiled to death. They were willing to be flayed alive. They were willing to be dragged through streets until they were dead by horses. Why were they? Because they knew that my God lives. And I'm willing to die because I know that I am saved. I am redeemed. I have life because of him. You see, this was the evidence of his divinity. And yet they rejected him for this very reason. They rejected him because he claimed to be God, because you know what? They did not want to admit that he was God, because then they would have to give up their own power. You know what? Many times we call ourselves Christians, but do you really say that Jesus is God? Do you really understand what that means for your life? If you claim to be a Christian, you're claiming that Jesus is God, and yet I look at some of our lives and Jesus is not God in your life. He's a good teacher. He's a philosophy. But we need to be faced with this fact. Are we willing to say that he is God? He is Lord. That changes how we live our life, because we're going to stand before our God. The second reason they rejected him is because he didn't fit what they were looking for. You see, they wanted a man that was going to come and set them free. They wanted a man that was going to come and get rid of the Romans and give them life. I can do it. See, that's what they wanted. You know what? They rejected him because he wasn't giving them what they wanted. Well, Jesus, forget you. You got our hopes up, and now I don't even want to talk to you anymore, because you just keep telling me all this other nonsense. They rejected him because the Messiah was supposed to set us free, which is true. In the Old Testament, it did say that the Messiah was come, but they didn't read that the Messiah had more than one job. And the Messiah is still going to come to do that. He just has not come. This is where we know that Jesus is coming again to finish his job. He will come to bring us life, to bring us freedom from sin and from sickness and the stupid chaos of this world and the rulers that we have to live under. But Jesus said, first, I've come to set you free from your own sin, from your spiritual bondage. And they didn't want to hear that. You see, so many times that he talked to them, he didn't fit the Messiah mold. We look at the Messiah mold. What do we want in a Messiah? Well, this is what he said. He said, my kingdom is spiritual, not physical. Nah, I don't want that. Okay, great, Jesus, but we need the physical. Many times we reject Jesus because we want what we want. And God, come on, you need to do what I need. And yet he says, I want you to focus on your character. I want you to focus on your heart. You need to get this right in your life first. No, Jesus, you need to answer my prayer. You need to do this. He said, my kingdom is spiritual, not physical. The other thing is, he didn't keep up traditions. He didn't do things the way that they thought they needed to be done. You need to understand that this is how we need to act in church. This is how we need to follow God. And yet he didn't follow those traditions fully the way that they wanted. The other thing is, he associated with the wrong people. Jesus, okay, if you're going to live this way, you can't go hang out with the prostitutes. I'm sorry, people are going to look at you. They're going to think bad things. You know what? We need to begin to deal with what Jesus was trying to accomplish. And yet many times, he doesn't fit our mold. Finally, he was a threat to the religious status. Because here's the thing, Jesus didn't care about your religion. He didn't care the status that it gave you, that people look up to you. He didn't care that people, that you begin to feel good about doing good things. That's not what he was about. In fact, he more brought in humility and suffering and servanthood rather than the status that comes from being religious. So we see that Jesus did not fit the mold. Jesus didn't do what they want. How many know that today, we don't admit it, but Jesus is not doing what you want. And some of you are upset at it. And some of you aren't upset at it, but you're just not going to follow him. You're going to claim him, but you're not following him because Jesus is not fitting the mold of what you want. And I've, tried to follow him, but this doesn't feed me. Oh, that's a big one. You know what? I need to be fed. I need to feel. You're missing the point. We don't deserve anything but death. What we need to do is come and fall on our face and surrender our life to God, whatever he calls. Last reason they rejected him. First of all, they rejected his claim to be God. They rejected his way of living. The third thing, they rejected him because he demanded life change. You see, it was more than just follow me. It was more than just believe in what I'm telling you. But Jesus actually, here's a crazy thing. He expected people to change. What the world do you think, Jesus, this is? That I've got to get out of my comfort zone. I got to give up things. You're here to set me free, not me to lose everything. How is that freedom? And yet Jesus made this crazy statement. He who gains the whole world will lose it all. But he who loses his life will find it. Well, Jesus, that just doesn't make sense. So I'm supposed to change everything to follow you. Yes. And they rejected him. And I'm going to tell you, we reject him because we refuse to change. You know what? There's something we'll change on the outside. There's some little things. Oh, I'll change. But when it comes to the real change, that's when we have a problem. And Jesus always knows the very core that you're unwilling to change. And that's where he goes. And that's why many of us are uncomfortable with church. We don't like to be here a lot because there's a conviction that we know God is calling us and we are rejecting him. And so we'll avoid even getting in the position where we might have to reject him. In fact, it's better to avoid him than to have to reject him. And yet that is rejecting him. In fact, this is what Jesus said. We love the time when he brought the woman before him. And he said, anyone that has something against this woman, you throw the first stone. But remember, anyone that, if you have sin in your life, you're not worthy of that. And he looked up and he said, is there anyone to condemn you? And she said, no one, Lord. And Jesus said, neither do I condemn you. Let's just stop right there because that's where we stop. Neither do I condemn you. Oh, Jesus is such a loving God. He would accept even, you know, a woman caught in this. But I'm going to tell you, I think many times we read the last part real quick and real low. Go and sin no more. When I think he said, neither do I condemn you. Go and sin no more. We put the emphasis in the wrong place. It's probably both equal. But Jesus said, go and sin no more. He expected a change. I am not going to condemn you. And because I'm not condemning you and I'm loving you, I expect you to change. I expect you not to go back to the same thing that they're going to drag you to me tomorrow. Are we willing to change? God touches. He is looking at many of us. Go and sin no more. And now we're back next Sunday. Change. He expected us to change. He looked at the rich young ruler who had followed all the commandments. And when Jesus heard this, that he had done everything right, he said to him, one thing you still lack, sell everything that you have and distribute it to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come and follow me. See, he went right to the core. Jesus, why'd you have to go there? Come on, just pat me on my back that I've all followed all the commandments, that I believe in you, and I'm a good person. And then he went right to the place where he was unwilling to change because Jesus knows. He said, you have something that's an idol to you. You need to go and get rid of it. And what did it say? He walked away sad because he was not willing to change. He was not willing to give that up. And again, he said, if anyone will come after me, let him deny himself, pick up his cross, and follow me. You see, Jesus expected change. That's why they rejected him. That's why all those disciples, we read that, began to walk away. Oh, this is not what we signed up for. We thought you were going to be kind of a cool guy. You know, you're kind of the fun guy to be with. You know, you're the fun uncle. You know, those other rabbis, they're so sticky and they are stuck in their religion. We thought you were going to be fun and now you're telling us we got to do all this too. And they begin to leave him. And yet we're the same way. So we need to ask ourselves, why do we reject him? Oh, I don't reject him. Really? And yet, do we limit his authority in our life? Or do we try and, okay, God, I'm going to follow you, but let me just tell you how this is going to work. No, you're not going to tell him how anything's going to work. You're going to listen to what he says and what the Word of God says. We need to stop limiting his authority in our life. What you're really doing is you're rejecting God. And I know this comes in our face, because many of us do not think that we are the rejectors, and yet we're crying out, crucify him. Maybe it's the fact that we're trying to mold him into our image. Okay, God, you're going to work into my schedule. You know, every Sunday at church, okay, I'll give you one Sunday a quarter, I'll give you that. No, that's molding him into your image. We need to begin to surrender our life. He is God. Who are we to say how he's going to work? Because he's going to do things the way that you don't want him to. Are you willing to follow even when it's ways that you don't want or that you don't like? If not, we're rejecting him. Or the last thing, maybe we're trying to avoid real change. I'm going to follow you. I'm not going to cuss anymore. That's a good one. I won't cuss anymore. Okay, great. How about changing your whole priority on what's important in your life? See, we do the little changes, but we're not willing to do the deep changes that God's calling you to. And yet, if we're going to let him be Messiah, if we're going to let him be Savior, you need to stop rejecting him. They rejected him. They cried out, crucify him, crucify him. The very people he loved. And you know what? We are the people he loves, and many times we are rejecting him. But here's the great thing. And here's the thing. We might say, why are we talking about his rejection? Okay, yes, he got rejected, but what's the big deal? Let's just try and follow him. Here's the great thing. His rejection was our acceptance. You see, it is in that rejection that he took our rejection. Because I'm going to tell you right now, God rejects you. You are rejected by God. You are not good enough to come into God's presence. You chose to go against God, which brought a death sentence on you. You are reserved for hell. And I know it's a harsh thing, but this is the harsh reality. No one is good, no, not one. All of our righteousness is as dirty rags before God. You are rejected. And so Jesus took that rejection. He says, yes, I was rejected, but I was rejected so that you might be accepted. Do you know that because Jesus was rejected, God has now opened his arms to you? So this is why we need to begin to accept Christ. Are you willing to accept Christ? Are you willing to let him be God? Are you willing to let him act in ways that you don't like? Are you willing to change in whatever way he calls us to? Because in doing so, his rejection brings your acceptance. This is the wonderful word of Easter. You are accepted because of Jesus. You are accepted. You are made clean. If you will only begin to follow him. What a great word. You have life. You can know the peace and fulfillment of being fully accepted by Christ, by God, by Christ, by the Holy Spirit. Let's stop rejecting him. Let's look in our hearts and say, God, forgive me for my rejection. But let me embrace your rejection so that I might be accepted today. Let's bow our hearts.